In this day, we are going to be talking about the remaining three chapters of bankruptcy. They are chapter 9, chapter 12, and chapter 15. So with this one is chapter 9, I'm going to talk about what are the bankruptcy basics, what people have to understand. So basically, the first municipal bankruptcy litigation was enacted in 1934 during the Great Depression. So even though Congress took care to draft the legislation so are not to interfere with sovereign powers of the states guaranteed by the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. So basically, the foundations of this bankruptcy was, so the Supreme Court upheld this decision in 1934 Act unconditional as an improper interface with the sovereignty of the states. And this was Ashton versus Cameron County Water Bankruptcy Act in 1937, which was upheld by the Supreme Court, United States versus Binkins, 304 U.S. 27, 1938. The bankruptcy laws have been amended several times since 1937. And so these bankruptcy laws have been in fact 60 years since Congress has established a federal mechanism for resolutions of municipal debts. There have been fewer than 500 municipal bankruptcy petitions filed. Even though Chapter 9 cases are rare, a filing by a large municipality can. An example was 1994 filing by Orange County, California, involved many millions of dollars in municipal debt. So, what is the purpose of municipal bankruptcy? So, this ties will kind of tie in to the other three, Chapter 7, Chapter 11, and Chapter 13 bankruptcy. So, Chapter 9 mainly deals with municipal bankruptcies. So the purpose of Chapter 9 is to provide a financially distressed municipality protection from its creditors while it develops and negotiates a plan for adjusting its debt and recognition of debt of a municipality is typically accumulated either by extending debt maturities, reducing the amounts of principal or interest, or refinancing the debt by obtaining a new loan. Even though this is similar to other chapters of bankruptcy, Chapter 9 is significantly different in that there is no provisions in the law for liquidation of the assets of the municipality and distribution of the proceeds to creditors. Such as liquidation or dissolution would undoubtedly violate the 10th Amendment of the Constitution and the reservation of the state of sovereignty over the internal affairs. So because the 10th Amendment guarantees the right of citizens, especially states, equal protections under the law. So basically the 10th Amendment is, it's basically I'm going to give you the abbreviated thing, is like the powers not to delegate to the United States by the Constitution or prohibited by to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So that's basically what the 10th Amendment says. So because of that, the federal government doesn't want to violate the 10th Amendment rights of states, or they don't want to intervene in Chapter 9 bankruptcy cases on in states or different counties of states where some issues are happening. So basically, this was a decision by the Supreme Court to uphold municipal bankruptcy legislation. The bankruptcy court generally, but not always, active in managing municipal bankruptcy cases, as it is in corporate recognition under Chapter 11. So the function of bankruptcy court in Chapter 9 cases are generally limited to approving the petition if the debtor is eligible. So it has to be a certain threshold, but I can't remember, or I don't know what the threshold is. And so basically, in these certain cases, they can, like, the county and the creditor can work out a repayment plan to help pay off the debts that they currently are owing or they are accruing. So what is the eligibility? So only a municipality can file for under Chapter 9. The term municipality is defined in the Bankruptcy Code as political subdivision or public agency or instrumentally of a state. So basically, this definition is broad to include cities, counties, townships, schools, districts, and public improvement districts. And it can also include revenue-producing bodies that provide services which are paid by the user rather than by general taxes, such as bridge authorities, highway construction, or like when you're trying to get pay for your gas. That is either, for some states, it's owned privately or by the state. So these are the couple things of the requirements for eligibility for Chapter 9 for municipalities. So part 1 is municipalities must be specifically authorized to be a debtor by state law or by a governmental officer or organization empowered by the state law to authorize the municipality to be a debtor. The second one is municipality must be insolvent as defined in 11 U.S.C. of the code. Number 3, municipality must desire to effect a plan to adjust its debt. And last one is municipality must either, they have to obtain an agreement from the creditors holding at least a majority in amount of the claims of each class that the debtor intends to impair under a plan in case under Chapter 9. The second one is negotiate in good faith with creditors and fail to obtain the agreement of creditors holding at least a majority in amount of the claims of each class that the debtor intends to impair upon a plan. The second one is be unable to negotiate with creditors because such negotiation is impracticable or reasonably believe that a creditor may attempt to obtain a preference. So basically, of these cases, municipalities must voluntarily seek protection under bankruptcy code. So they can only apply for this is if they are, like, if they get the state or what they are having the trouble paying to the state to be protected to, so they can negotiate their debts into one consolidated payment plan. So this is basically the reason I wanted to start off with Chapter 9 is because that's basically for cities and states, and also like other like federal regulated agencies or like state and local agencies that can also file for this. So basically, when they are doing this, is the bankruptcy codes for municipalities are, I think they're slightly shorter, but I might be wrong. They might be like slightly shorter or slightly longer. I think they're in like those between. So basically with these is the municipality chapter 9 is, has the courts have limited power because of they don't want to intervene with states or local rights under the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution. And so I'm going to be talking after that one, which is going to be kind of a good tie-in, is chapter 12, bankruptcy. So basically the background of chapter 12 is kind of for people who are listening, who have farms or they are fishermen with regular annual income, is financially, who have been in financially distressed family farmers and fishermen, to propose and carry out a plan to repay all or part of their debt under chapter 12. Debtors' purpose to repayment plan to make installments to creditors over 3 to 5 years. Generally, the plan must provide for payments over 3 years unless the court approves a longer period for cases. But unless plan purpose to pay 100% of domestic support claims, i.e. child support and alimony, if any exists, it must be for 5 years and must include all of the debtor's disposable income. In no case many plans to provide for payments over a period longer than 5 years. So with tailoring the bankruptcy laws to meet economic realities of family farming and family fishermen, chapter 12 eliminates many of the barriers such as debtors would face if seeking to recognize under chapter 11 or chapter 13 of the bankruptcy code. For example, chapter 12 is more streamlined, less complicated, and less expensive than chapter 11, which is better for if people can sue for large corporate recognition in that are addition to few family farmers or fishermen find chapter 13 to be advantageous because it's designed for wage earners who have similar debts than those facing family farmers in chapter 12. Congress sought to combine the features of bankruptcy code, which can provide framework for successfully family farmers and fishermen recognitions. So basically, family fishermen with regular annual income may file a protection for relief under chapter 12. So chapter 12 can be used in either, it can be recognized under chapter 11 or chapter 13. So because chapter 12 is mainly a certain, is used for certain things, so for to file under chapter 12, like individual and spouses must be engaged in farming operations or a commercial fishing operation. The total debt secured, doesn't matter if it's secured or unsecured, must not exceed $11,097,350 if a family farmer owes like over $2,268,5550 if a family is a fisherman. And also it has to, if a family is a farmer, it can't exceed 50%, and if it's a fisherman, at least 80% of total debts that are fixed in amount excluding of debt for debtor's principal residence unless such debt arises out of farming or commercial fishing operations. The fourth one is more than 50% of gross income of the individual or the individual and spouse for the preceding tax year, or for family farmers only for each second and third prior tax years, must have come from farming or commercial fishing operations. So basically, chapter 12 is kind of used for people who are like, who are working or who are using that for being part of the places, because this helps people who are like farmers but also fishermen. And so, but also you have with chapter 12, you can kind of have a little bit more of a legal room, but also this proceeding is 180 days to prior bankruptcy petition was dismissed due to debtor's willful failure to appear before the court or comply with orders of the court, or was voluntarily dismissed after creditors sought relief from their bankruptcy court to recover property upon which they held liens. So basically, a lien is basically if you want to sell your home, or if you want to sell like your car, then there will be a lien on your homes, because they want to get that portion of that asset you are going to sell. So you have to give those creditors their money to them. So it depends if you have one or two creditors and they're asking for this amount of money, then it's going to be less amount of money for the house you're selling. I'm just using that as an example, because that's one of the, what a lot of companies do, would put a lien on your house or car. So basically, how does chapter 12 work? So chapter 12 cases begins with a lawyer, or an individual can file a petition with a bankruptcy court serving the area where you live or where the partitionship debtor has the place of business. So basically, sorry, I'm just really tired today. They shall really file with court schedules of assets and liabilities. So schedules of current income and expenditures. The third one is schedule of extraordinary contracts and expired leases. And the fourth one is a statement of financial affairs. So basically is how much you're bringing in, how much you have in savings, and how much you have in assets such as investments. And so basically it's used for both spouses. So basically in this is like, has husband and wife might file a joint petition or individual petitions. So a lot of this now is they have the same sex households. And it's basically like two wives where they file jointly, and if they are in a court issue. So basically the courts have to charge $200 case filing fee and a $75 miscellaneous administration fee. But sometimes this might be different depending on where you reside. So this is, even though it says like the 200 or the 75 miscellaneous administration fee, but it might be different depending on the courthouse. So basically, these fees have to be paid to the clerk of the courthouse upon filing with the court. So that's when you're filing, you have to pay, like, if you're going to go through, like, for people who are going through divorces, they have to file with the state or the courthouse they want to file in, because you have to use that to go through the courts, because it has to be interesting, but also it's used to track. You have a case number that you use to track, or what you need to add, or for evidence and all that to the judge and to the courts. Or if you go to trial, you make sure you have to have a lawyer. And so basically it's like informing like official bankruptcy forms, you have to list all the creditors and the amounts of nature of their claims, the source, the amount, frequency of the debtor's income, list all debtor's property and assets, and the detailed list of debtor's monthly farming and living expenses, food, shelter, utilities, tax, transportation, medicine, feed and fertilizer and all of that. And so basically for married individuals, they have to gather their information such as spouse, regardless of whether they are filing a joint petition, separate individual petitions, or even if only one spouse is filing in a situation where only one spouse files. It doesn't matter with that, you still technically have to file, bring all of your spouse's information into that, even though if that person is either filing separately or they're not filing. So they do take that into account, and sometimes they use that. And so after chapter 12 also contains a special ultimate stay provision that protects co-debtors, unless if bankruptcy court authorized otherwise, creditor may not seek to collect. So basically between like to help us like to, for a petition to be filed, the chapter 12 trustees will hold a meeting, and it's between 21 to 35 days after the petition is filed. And so basically the meeting, as I said, of creditors, if the U.S. trustee or bankruptcy administrator schedules the meeting at a place that does not have regular U.S. trustees or bankruptcy administration staffing. So then, and also other key interesting fact is it can has to be held no more than 60 days after debtor files, and it has to be filed in those and has to have that meeting so you can have time to work it out. And if all both parties aside are happy, what if they want to do a repayment structure or if they want to have their whole debt forgiven. So basically, if the debtor, they have to file a repayment with the petition or within 90 days after filing the petition, the plan must be submitted by the court for approval, provided for payment or fixed amount to the trustee on a regular basis. So basically that is you're paying a trustee to help like negotiate or help with payments to the debt to your creditors. And so basically there is like separate like days that you have to keep in mind, that you have to keep track of, because if you don't, your chances of not getting this approved is not like slim to none, but it's more like you have to keep track of the dates and days. And so basically projected disposal income or property or equivalent value to plan repayments over a 3 to 5 year period, and as long to unsecured creditors are in to receive at least as much as they would receive if debtors' non-exempt assets were liquidated under Chapter 7 of the Bankruptcy Code. So when it's like making a plan, it's very important when you're making a Bankruptcy Chapter 12 plan, because you need to know how much you are going to be saving, or how much money you're, well, not saving, but more you're going to be paying out to creditors. Or if you use Chapter 12, you can use that to your advantage on what you're doing. So and also, you know, Chapter 12, it can be under Chapter 12, you can have your debt discharged. Means basically discharge is it's wiped off of you like for good. And then they also have another one, is called hardship discharge. So hardship discharge is if you're going through unemployment, or if you have like a medical issue that will probably be, it's like no fault to you, that will be considered a hardship discharge because you might have a surgery or you might have a sudden illness and you can't pay your creditors because you're trying to save your life. Basically, that's what a hardship discharge is. Basically, what they kind of do. And so, not last to least, is Chapter 15 bankruptcy is basically, nutshell is, if you're going to be going out of bank, out of business, and you're going to go file for bankruptcy, and you have businesses overseas, then you have to file for Chapter 15 in the United States and other countries where you do business, is because it's, so this is basically bankruptcy 15 has been changed over time. So basically Chapter 15 is a new chapter added to the bankruptcy code by the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005. And it's the U.S. domestic adoption of the model law on cross-border insolvency promulgated by the United Nations Commission on International Trade Law in 1997. And it replaces Section 304 of the Bankruptcy Code. Because the UNCITRAL source of Chapter 15, the U.S. interpretation must be coordinated with the interpretation given by other countries that have adopted it as internal law to promote a uniform and coordinated legal regime for cross-border insolvency cases. So basically, what the Chapter 15 is, it's a law that was adopted from the United Nations international trade law. So basically, this is to make for companies that are going bankrupt or they're trying to fight for bankruptcy protections, they can use Chapter 15 because they are in other countries. And they are doing business in other countries. So because of that, they have to file for Chapter 15. But unless if they are doing, if they only work in the United States, then they can file for any of the chapters for bankruptcy because they don't do business internationally. But unless if they're doing business internationally, then they have to file for Chapter 15 because they have to have a business overseas. Because in Europe, for you to do business overseas and you're a corporation, you have to have a headquarters in a European country for you to do business in Europe under their laws. So Chapter 15 cases are very different because either if a foreign corporation has like businesses in like different countries and they also have a headquarters in the UK, US, and they also have headquarters in like Latin America, then because of that and because they're going out of the business because of bankruptcy issues, then they have to file like their equivalent in their home country for Chapter 15. And even though that kind of has to be similar to the United Cross-Border Insolvency Promulgated International Trade Law, so basically every country has to have like something similar to the United Nations International Trade Law. So basically what that did was to help companies that are doing business overseas or businesses that are headquartered overseas who need to go in through bankruptcy, that they can do it in one country and they can go through bankruptcy easier in different countries. So basically, the important goal of Chapter 15 is to promote cooperation and communication between U.S. courts and parties of interest with foreign courts and parties of interest to cross-border cases. So basically, what this goal is to accomplish by, among other things, especially changing the court and estate representation to cooperate to the maximize intent possible with foreign courts and foreign representatives, and authorizing direct communications between the court and authorities, estate representatives, and the foreign court and foreign representatives. So basically, that's basically what it says right there. I'm going to put that into a, like, it's basically having open communications from U.S. courts and other foreign courts around the world. So basically, that is having open communication to see what they are going to do, and then the U.S. has to tailor to be used. So basically, the UNCITRAL model law has been adopted with certain variations in Canada, Mexico, Japan, and several other countries. Adoptions are pending in the United Kingdom and Australia, as well as other countries with significant international economic interests. So this is my podcast for today, and I will be having one more episode coming out in the next couple, in a week or so, and this will be my last episode for in the next coming week for my season. And if you're any of you who are interested, please come on to my show, and I would love to have a talk with you guys. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.